Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the United States v. Murdock. Mr. Ginsburg?
May it please the Court. My name is Jordan Ginsburg, and I've been appointed to represent the appellant, Kyron Murdock, in this appeal. Mr. Murdock appeals the trial court's denial of his motion to suppress his Miranda rights waiver and his subsequent confession to possessing a firearm. This is a case about the Peoria Police Department's overzealousness and employment of a cocktail of coercion that combined to render Mr. Murdock's Miranda waiver and confession involuntary. I'd like to start by briefly summarizing the facts that we assume as true for the purposes of this appeal, as adduced from the testimony and the hearing in the motion to suppress. In the late morning hours of August 25, 2005, after a brief chase that involved an officer attempting to tase Mr. Murdock, Mr. Murdock was arrested in a high-crime neighborhood of Peoria, Illinois. Mr. Murdock sat, handcuffed, in the back of a police car for at least 1 hour while the officers canvassed the neighborhood. During this time, one of the officers walking down an alley in that neighborhood found a handgun sitting in some water at the bottom of a garbage can. Later, officers took Mr. Murdock to the police station parking lot, where they interrogated him three occasions, each time with only one officer present. It was during this time that an officer read, and Mr. Murdock verbally waived his Miranda rights. During a subsequent interrogation, he admitted that the gun the police found was his, though neither forensic evidence nor any eyewitness was able to link Mr. Murdock with the weapon. Throughout his time in custody, Mr. Murdock was confined to a police car with his hands cuffed behind him. During his confinement, Mr. Murdock was never offered an opportunity to stretch his legs, use the restroom, or get a drink of water.
You're not trying to allege there was some coercion here?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what was the coercion? That, because he actually, as I understand it, confessed before he was held there for that period of time in handcuffs and at the station, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. First, he was kept with his hands cuffed in a physically coercive, we argue, a physically coercive.
That's my question, because, I mean, just being handcuffed, that's pretty routine. Everybody would have a coercion claim if it's just the idea of being in handcuffs. And then you've got the other big issue of credibility, because the district judge credited the testimony of the officers.
Certainly.
In terms of Miranda, so...
With respect to the credibility argument, we are not directly contesting the trial court's conclusion that Mr. Murdock waived his Miranda rights or subsequently confessed. What we're contending is that, based on Seventh Circuit precedent, such as in United States v. Doe, given the totality of the circumstances, the fact that Mr. Murdock was kept confined in that position for well over an hour. It was an hour before he got to the police station. Then,
did you ever sit in a hospital emergency room waiting?
I have been in a hospital emergency room, yes.
Well, I can tell you can sit longer than an hour and a half.
Thankfully, though, I wasn't handcuffed with my hands behind my back for that period.
Well, handcuffing, now we're talking about two different things.
But the problem I just have is just for that period of time, you know, what case law do you have just with that being, just being handcuffed and for that period of time that supports a claim of coercion or not being voluntary?
In United States v. Doe, Your Honor, the police arrested a man. They took him to a park near the scene of the arrest, and the defendant waived his Miranda rights. After that, the officers questioned him for about an hour. He appealed, arguing that his Miranda waiver was involuntary and should have been suppressed. This court indicated that that questioning, going to a park and keeping him handcuffed and interrogating him for an hour, raises concerns because the interrogation took place in a park and not at the police station. But the court then held it was not enough to nullify the Miranda waiver, quote, in absence of further evidence that the police acted improperly. What I contend is that this is the sort of Doe plus an example of a Doe plus analysis. Given, like in Doe, Mr. Murdock was handcuffed with his hands behind him, was kept in a police car for an extended period of time, over 1 hour at the scene, and then the record isn't clear as to how long he was kept at the police station, but it was long enough for the police to get most of the way through fingerprinting the gun, enough time for one of the officers to sit in a car multiple times and go back and forth, check on the fingerprinting of the firearm, and enough time for another officer to get the drugs tested, weighed into the property room, that would suffice. This case also has the further evidence that Doe required for a Miranda rights waiver to be involuntary. For one, there was no written waiver provided. There were no witnesses to the interrogations. The questioning occurred in a parking lot in close proximity to the interrogation rooms. In other words, there are no excuses or explanations for why they couldn't have just taken Mr. Murdoch inside and had access to an interrogation room, Miranda rights waivers, and so forth. There are no logistical concerns. There were no necessary reasons to keep him in the parking lot just a few feet from the interrogation room.
So your position is it's just the cumulative effect, because, of course, there's case law that says that you don't have to have a written waiver of rights form, but that doesn't render a waiver involuntary. I mean, each of these little pieces you're talking about, or being handcuffed, you know, for just an hour, you know, there's case law that says that, you know, even for much longer periods, it's not considered involuntary or coercive. So you're talking about the cumulative effect. Is that the bottom line in terms of your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that's sort of the primary difference from what appears in the briefing of the government and the briefing of Mr. Murdoch. The government treats the individual actions of the police one after the other, sort of piecemeal fashion, as opposed to treating them collectively under the totality of the circumstances test that this court has recognized for cases of involuntary waiver and involuntary confession. Further, Mr. Murdoch's confession is the only evidence linking him to the gun. What's more, the behavior exhibited by the Peoria Police Department on August 25th went against the standard protocol. Typically, for cases of this seriousness, as Sergeant Theobald testified during the hearing on the motion to suppress, a witness to any interrogation is typically present, and a written waiver is usually provided. Moreover, in serious cases, and Sergeant Theobald recognized this as one of such cases, it's not uncommon for the officers to have the interrogation videotaped. None of that happened here. That the government calls into question suggests that Mr. Murdoch calls into question the credibility determinations made by the trial court when it heard testimony on the motion to suppress. The government is mistaken. This appeal doesn't focus on the credibility determinations made by the court, but rather it takes as a given the factual findings, namely that Mr. Murdoch was read his Miranda rights and subsequently confessed. The government also focuses on all the ways in which Mr. Murdoch was not coerced. But this is also of no moment. Just because the police did not avail themselves of the full panoply of methods of coercion available to them doesn't mean that they didn't employ some. Doesn't mean they didn't employ enough to render Mr. Murdoch's Miranda waiver and confession involuntary. Further, the government puts a lot of stock in the testimony of the officers during the hearing on the motion to suppress, when they stated that there was no reason to take Mr. Murdoch inside the police station and question him. However, this logic is circular, since they testified that for crimes of a certain level of seriousness, and they agreed this was such a level of seriousness, they typically do take people and suspects inside the station. Given the equipment, space, and logistical accoutrements available to them, that would be reason enough to have taken Mr. Murdoch the few feet inside the station. The government also...
Ms. Kendrick, is your suggestion that the housing, if you will, or custodial housing in the squad car near the station is inherently coercive?
No, Your Honor. I'm not suggesting that it is
Let's say they moved him immediately, and we had the same handcuffed small interrogation room or whatever, and he sits there for an hour. I mean, how... I guess that's the only thing we've done. We've moved the venue, but we haven't changed the facts other than that. You're stressing this move to the station house as if that would be a significant difference. At least that's what I hear.
Correct. Having the opportunity to be brought into the station house would make available to Mr. Murdoch presumably a Miranda rights waiver. The officers testified that a waiver was inside the station house. It would also afford him sort of more human comforts in terms of being able to presumably to sit down in a chair. I assume there would be a chair in the interrogation room. There would be the opportunities for him to stretch his leg. I presume there's water available. And I think in circumstances it wouldn't be uncommon for him not to have to sit for an extended period of time with his hands behind his back. Your Honor, I believe the white light means that my time is up.
Well, I've reserved 2 minutes. Rebuttal, it's your time if you want to use it now, but if you'd like some rebuttal, you should save it.
Thank you. I'll do that.
Right. Thank you, Ms. Ginsburg. Mr. Cox.
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Cox on behalf of the United States. May it please the Court. Although both parties focus, in my view, a lot of time and effort on the waiver issue in their briefs, I've been raised as a practical person in the federal district courts, and I'd like to focus my attention, just as Mr. Ginsburg did, essentially on the voluntariness issue, which we believe was not asserted appropriately in the district court, which explains why there's no evidence, quite frankly, of any coercive activities that the police engaged in with regard to Mr. Murdoch. Typically, when there's claims that someone's will was overborne, that they confessed involuntarily, you hear from the defendant himself, the victim. The police deprived me of this. I asked for this. They beat me. I was subjected to repeated questioning over many, many hours by different police officers. None of that is present here. We have no evidence of that. The only evidence we have is that on two relatively short occasions, two separate police officers interrogated Mr. Murdoch in the back of the squad car. The third incident that Mr. Ginsburg talks about was really, I would not call an interrogation. It was more further conversation in which Mr. Murdoch further explained why he had a handgun, that he had a brother who had been killed in a shooting. The police officer, who Judge McDade credited, testified there was no interrogation. He was merely sitting in the squad car at that point doing his paperwork.
And is there any record on the length of time or the confinement he was actually in the police car?
There is not, Your Honor. And I went through the record as carefully as I could. And the only time that anyone asked any question about length of time was how long Mr. Murdoch was in the squad car at the scene where the traffic stop had originally occurred, and the testimony was that was about an hour. We don't know how long he sat in the back of the squad car at the police station. I mean, we can only presume based on the circumstantial evidence, but again, I think that suggests why the focus of the hearing in the district court is much different than the focus of the appellant's brief. If you were truly attacking whether or not the confession was voluntary, whether it was coerced, you typically would have had questions about the age, background of the defendant, for instance. We don't even know that about Mr. Murdoch from this record. We don't know we know he was in the back of a squad car, but we know very little else about the duration. We don't know the time, as Your Honor just suggested. The testimony certainly is that there were no threats or physical abuse directed at Mr. Murdoch. Any of the things that would normally be part of that record were absent. They weren't questioned by either the prosecutor or questioned by the defense attorney at that time, which suggests to me that the real focus was, as we have suggested, on whether or not the confession actually occurred, which was really a trial issue, not a suppression issue, and then whether or not he was given and waived his Miranda rights. And for those reasons, if you have no further questions, I would give back the balance of my time, and we'd ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Scott, Mr. Ginsburg?
I'd like to touch on two issues very briefly. With respect to the waiver argument, the trial court indicated that it would consider the voluntariness of the statements attributed to Mr. Murdoch. The judge stated that he was going to consider, quote, whether or not the defendant made the statements voluntarily and not, quote, whether or not he made the statements. At the hearing on the oral argument on the motion to suppress, the government agreed with that assessment. Further, the government took pains to develop the entire record. If you look through the transcript of the motion to dismiss, the government did not focus just on the factual existence of a waiver and a confession. It took pains to hammer that out further and to develop the record in a more systematic method. The defense counsel, in its written pleadings, made a voluntariness argument, and the government's response to the motion to suppress further discussed the voluntariness issue. And during the questioning in the hearing of the motion to suppress, the defense counsel asked questions of the officers concerning the timing of the interrogations as well as the one-on-one nature of the interrogations. I see the balance of my time is now up.
Thank you, Ms. Ginsburg. Thank you, Mr. Cox. Mr. Ginsburg, is Mr. Favia with you at council table?
Yes, he is.
Yes. Well, I assume he accepted the appointment, a joint appointment with you, or?
I was appointed, and he, yes.
Well, in addition to the thanks I've extended, I want to add an additional thanks on behalf of the court for your accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Murdoch.
Thank you.
All right. The case is taken under advisement.